Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2. 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon. 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Hey everybody, welcome back to episode 18 of Dialed In with Jake and Zach. One moment from our friends at Law Chevrolet here before we get the episode kicked off.
Hey guys, it's Dylan here at Law Chevrolet Buick. Man, what an amazing year it was. 2018 was truly awesome. The support that we had from our drag racing community was tremendous. Whether it was coming and purchasing a vehicle from us or sending somebody in that you knew or even making sure that you got your service work done here. Guys, we truly appreciate that. With that being said, we're going to continue what we did in 2018. If you're part of our drag racing community and you come and purchase a vehicle from us, we're going to give you $600 on a Visa gift card. It can be used for whatever you want it to be used for. If you're like me, that's some buyback money. So, like I said, we appreciate everything you guys have done for us in 2018. Let's make 2019 a great year again. So make sure to give me a call here at 812-897-2220 or just visit lawchevy.com. We'd be glad to take care of you guys. Thank you.
So welcome back to Dialed In with Jake and Zach. Episode 18, man. How's it going?
Dude, pretty good. Another week behind us. Started putting the motor back together for my car a little bit, so getting a little bit closer to 2019 racing. Of course, with every two-step forwards comes one step back. Found a piston that didn't quite survive what happened the last time, so that was kind of my setback for today. But I did get my crankshaft and rods in. Found a guy to help me balance the crankshaft. I don't know, it's pretty tough. So everything is in motion, going the right way. So I'm looking forward to hearing noise before too long. What about you?
Yeah, what did that cost you to get that crankshaft turned, man?
Man, I tell you, it's it's a family rate. So I've been told to keep it kind of on the hush hush. You know, I can't really let y'all know, but yeah, pretty nice to be spoiled and have an in-house balance machine and all the equipment. So, but yeah, everything is slowly moving in the right direction. So I'm be anxious to get going soon. I do want to announce real quick, Throwdown Motorsports going to have This Is Bracket Racing Elite as a marketing partner again, 2019. So excited for that. Definitely a great wealth of knowledge on there. This Is Bracket Racing Elite is definitely helping me be the best driver I can be, and along with Sebert Performance. So excited to have those two companies joining me for 2019. So I just want to make sure I mention that. What's going on with you, Jake?
Yeah, I've been hanging around in the house all weekend long, trying to figure out a way to put some rods in a small block, but... Mm-hmm. Probably the couch is not the way to do that. But Thursday night, I actually went up to Innovative Slots. Champ Stephen McCrory and Joey Newburn had their big bracket race they have for the slot cars, the P. Huckett Race Promotions. It's not P. Huckett, but you put PH together and put Huckett after it. That's
right.
That's the company that puts it on. Actually, it might turn into the Brandon Hodge Nationals. He won the main event last year. He won the Thursday night gambler and the Sunday main event, $5,000 for a slot car race on Sunday. He ran Steve Collier in the final for $5,000. Steve was eight thousandths of a second on a toy car and in the way. So,
wow.
I think they had 36 racers at 8 entries apiece. So if you want to do your math, go right ahead. I don't feel like it at the moment. So another successful event for Champ and Joey Newburn. And, you know, that was a pretty cool deal that they had going on there. I think weekend entry fee was $295 or $395. Heck, I don't remember. But mm-hmm. it's ran just like a big car race. So I went mm-hmm. Thursday and played around a little bit and then spent the weekend around the house. So, yeah, not a whole lot going on. But speaking of wintertime bench racing, I think you got something to talk about.
Well, I wanted to was going to throw this in last week, but I thought, you know, what a better place to share a good racing banquet story than on this podcast might be entertaining for everybody. I think it's funny. I shared this story in a 2005 Chandler Motorsports Park banquet whenever I was standing up giving my speech after winning the Super Pro Championship that I was very fortunate to win that year. And it just hit me the other day that this would be a funny story to tell. So whenever I was 10 years old, I just completed my first season as a racer and junior dragster. I think I ended up winning like best appearing car that year or something. I think I won maybe one race the whole year running like 13s or something like that. For the banquet, You know, I was nervous. I was excited. You know, I was an awkward kid. I'm an awkward adult, but let's face it, I was an awkward kid as well. So going to the banquet, going to see all my friends, all my junior drag racing friends, and trying to get dressed up right, you know, want to look good, get my hair all combed up. I got my dress shirt on and nice shoes and pants, and I get in the car, and mom and dad, we go to the banquet, all excited to see everybody. I get to the banquet. We're already there. You know, it's not like it's just right down the street from home. You know, it's 30, 40 minutes. I look down, and in all this trying to get ready, I had put on two completely different dress shoes, and one of them was black and the other one was brown. So they weren't even the same color. And on top of that, they were both the same foot. So I didn't even have the right shoe on the right foot, and they were both the wrong color. And there was no turning back at that point. I just had to own it. I had to, at my 10-year-old self, just had to own it and joke around about it and wear my two different shoes to the banquet. So there's my racing banquet embarrassment story of my childhood.
So needless to say, you started off on the wrong foot.
Right. Ba-doom. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. So I haven't got to give, I gave one speech, and it was at a dirt racing banquet for a Power Ride Midget Championship deal, but that was in front of a group of bunch of dirt racers. It's kind of the same concept, but a whole lot different at the same time. It's like billiards and foosball, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I did the Chili Bowl. Is that this week?
It's this coming week. Yep.
Yeah. I saw that dude rolled in there with the midget on the back of the party bus.
Oh yeah. Yeah. The bus has got the upper deck of the bus is kind of like a watching that you can put on a stacker and stuff. So they kick off practice tomorrow. RacingBoys.net. I think it has live feed for that.
Saw something. Was it 300?
Yeah.
300 plus entries?
Oh, yeah. They have around 350 every year. And this year, they think they might have over 400 in the Tulsa River Spirit Expo Center. At 400, you have people parking outside, and Tulsa is not very far south. It's quite due west of Kentucky and Tennessee, so it's not warm there by any means.
Yeah, that's just crazy. I think I saw they start 60 some of them in the A main when they finally whittle it down.
Yeah, 20, 25, I think, actually.
Oh, okay. I don't know where I saw that then. I was thinking, because I saw that number and I was like, there's no way. So, because I thought, man, when they take the green flag, the leader is going to be lapping the last car.
Yeah, the track's probably a little over an eighth mile. So, you don't have room for that.
Yeah. Anyway, but yeah, awesome. That's turning into like one of the premier racing events in the world.
Oh yeah, it is. They struggle filling fields at regular races throughout the spring, fall, and summer. And you're like, man, there's nobody that has these race cars anymore. And they show up to the Chili Bowl and there's 400 of them. So
yeah,
they sometimes fail to get 20 on any given night throughout the U.S. And you know, everybody shows up for Emmett Hahn's event at the Expo Center and Chili Bowl. And it's I've ran the shootout. I never ran the Chili Bowl, but you know, everybody talks about, you know, if you go to watch the Chili Bowl, you're going to come home with the Chili Bowl flu, because you're in that dust and the alcohol fumes for days and hours on end. So you end up pretty sick a few days afterwards. I think I'll be just fine staying home and watching it on live feed.
Right.
That's what I should do for bracket racing as well, but I just don't listen to that. But Zach, before we get into today's big interview, we're going to have a word from our friends at the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny and a guy known as Guy LaDouche. So we'll be right back.
Saturday, February 23rd, the return of the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing, featuring the best and baddest practice tree drag racing on this side of the Mississippi. The Loose Rocker Promotions Animal Eliminator guaranteeing $3,000 to the winner and a free weekend entry to the St. Patrick's Classic at Virginia Motorsports Park. The Adams Racing Big Dog Shootout makes its debut, giving away a K&N Spring Fling Million Weekend Package valued at over $2,600 to the winner in the 64-entry field. For the Bottom Bulbers, the World Footbreak Challenge Bottom Bulb Blitz makes its return with a $1,000 payday going to the last man standing and a weekend entry to the World Footbreak Challenge at Bristol Dragway. 782 Township Road 101 in West Salem, Ohio, just 3 miles south of Dragway 42. Gates open at 1, racing at 4. Come on back to the biggest little practice tree race in the land, the In Motion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny, presented by Jim Feaster Racing. Be there!
So So, Zach, the Emotion Solutions Practice Tree Hootenanny is going to be just that, it sounds like. And February 23rd, 2019, I think that we both got an invite. Not sure if we're going to make it or not, but if you're in anywhere near the area, West Salem, Ohio, you should definitely be in attendance for the Hootenanny. I've always heard great things about that practice tree race, and you're going to be sitting on the home if you're not there. So a good reason to go and a good reason to attend. And the past winners, 2014, Matt Dattis won it. A lot of names that you see in the big money bracket racing world. 2015 was Randy Biddle Sr., not junior. Big Red Randy Biddle. 2016 was Charlie Moore Jr. 17, a repeat winner in Matt Dattis. And 18 was Dalton Neifer. So 2019, it could be you.
That's
could,
right.
You not you as in like anybody listening or you. Probably
yeah,
not me.
Probably yeah. Not me as well, but yeah, I'm really hoping that I can make it. We're trying to work out the details. You know, it looks like an awesome event. You know, definitely something that's should be on the calendar for everybody that's a bracket racer. I mean, you know, still February, not a lot of races going on, so might as well go try to win some money, let go. And that's what I love about these practice races. I can't screw it up on the big end.
Yeah. Yeah, that was like the telltale of your season towards the end of the year.
That's right. Yeah, I had great lights. I had great lights. That's why I just need a car that runs the same number every time.
Yep, absolutely. Getting to our interview today, a guy that not only has done a lot for the racing community, but he's done a lot for our country, and he's a local guy to you and I both. He, you know, he lives, you know, right down the road from you and just a little longer down the road from me, but a guy that I think we both call a friend before we call a competitor, but a guy that we also know we can call him at any point in time. And whether you're here in California, he'll figure out a way to help you out.
That's right. Yep. And a heck of a motivator, too. Like I said, Don is, man, he's in the middle of it. He is making moves and making things happen in drag racing every single day. He's working hard at it. So very excited to have him on the podcast. And I think you guys will enjoy the interview.
And one thing we didn't squeeze in there that I probably should have. At one time, I bought some used trailer tires from Don O'Neill, and one of them made it about 3 miles. I'm not sure if it's his fault or mine, but I won't let him live that one down.
Yeah, I think once a trailer tire becomes in your possession, there's just whatever that hex is that you have, I mean, you can't blame anybody else for it. I don't know why it happens, but it just does.
Yeah, I don't know. Jenna got a spark plug in the tire of her Mustang, and you know, nothing like that's ever happened before she met me, so mm-hmm. I feel like it's just you got to deal with it sometimes. But nonetheless, our interview with Don O'Neill. So on the microphone with us now, the two-time national event, two-time divisional winner and top sportsman, driver of the NGK Chevrolet Camaro, representative for Streetway Marketing and Media, and the resident elder for the Racels and Rental Cars podcast. Don O'Neill, how's it going, sir?
No, hey, I appreciate that. Afternoon, guys. Thanks for having me.
We're honored to have you, Don, and thank you very much for joining us. And to start out, just please give us and our listeners the Cliff Notes version of your racing career and your background as it relates to drag racing.
Well, like I said earlier, Cliff Notes is definitely what my racing successes have been. They've been very, very few so far as being a late bloomer, but nonetheless, grew up around it in drag racing, IHRA background for many years as a kid with my dad. My dad passed away when I was young, and I just kind of picked up the torch and always had the proverbial bug or gene in my blood to want to be around motorsports and be involved in drag racing. And once I was in the military for a few years, started, you know, saving pennies and nickels and dimes and still always coming back to drag racing. Made a lot of mistakes early on in my career. And then finally in 2007, when I went to recruiting command, kind of found that bridged gap of being passionate and have a desire to be in marketing and at this point in motorsports marketing, and put together the deal with the Army and the U.S. Army. And that's really how most people know me up until the last 4 or 5 years is, you know, I was the kid that drove the Army car in Super Comp and was truly the real Sarge. But anyway, never really had any claim to fame over there other than I was in the lane when TJ won his U.S. Nationals title in 2010. Left the Army after 23 years, landed with a great family in Southern Indiana, the Strauss-Wegg family. And here I am. It's hard to believe you guys are catching me on the day. This day, 6 years ago, I got my flag from the U.S. Army. So I have officially been retired 6 years today as we're recording this. So I got, you know, I'm looking through memories this morning and kind of doing the whole see where you've come from to see where you are now and really getting a springboard, if you will, into 2019 for what we've accomplished the last 4 years in Top Sportsman. And, you know, Jake, you introduced me as the driver of the NGK Camaro, and that's kind of still settling in, if you will. I still haven't quite got my head wrapped around the fact that, you know, I'm going to be driving a former Pro Stock Camaro and Top Sportsman in 2019 with NGK and VP and everyone. So I appreciate that. It's been a wild trip, and if I can write books if I could write an encyclopedia of all the mistakes and pass them out to people and they would actually read them, I could probably save people a lot of money, a lot of marriages and relationships, and could probably make other people more successful than I've been.
I'm right there with you on that one. So, as you said, you retired from the U.S. Army. First of all, thank you for your service. That means way more to Zach and I than you realize, because, you know, we both mm-hmm. have family members way down the line that have been in the service. So, mm-hmm. for one, thank you. But also, you carry a lot of disciplines over into your drag racing that have came from the trials and tribulations of being in the Army. Can you give us a few insights of, you know, how you go about things necessarily inside the race car that relate to the discipline that you learned packing a ruck?
Well, you know, the number one discipline, and I joke around with Luke about it from time to time, but the number one discipline that I think I brought from the military is never quit. Because Lord knows I should have quit chasing this dream of drag racing a long time ago. So that discipline of never quit, but also the methodic process of planning and just trying to plan for contingencies and outcomes and what ifs, and okay, you know, if this happens, I need to do that. If this happens, I need to do that. Or this could happen, you know, where. So the whole operational mindset, if you will, from the military, that training aspect of it, I definitely carried over that in the sleep patterns. I don't sleep even 23 years, 6 years being retired. I typically feed her on the ground by 5:45 every morning, and I eyeballs wide awake. So I guess you could say my body's never really changed to that civilian lifestyle. So I think I get a lot more done in a day than most people do. But at the same time, yeah, my military, I don't quit. I have no quit in me. Stevie Jackson, he's the one that's kind of coined those phrases, but I never have. I, you know, I've blown up stuff in a box on a Saturday at a race and carried it to an engine builder and said, here, I need you to put all this crap back together because I got to be somewhere on Thursday next weekend, and I need you to use it and not cost me an arm and a leg. And when I should have quit, I think Brett Nesbitt told me that the best. Him and Kenny Myers told me one day, it's like, dude, you got no quitting. You just keep taking a beating and you keep coming back. I think it's made me who I am today, and I'm just going to kind of keep rolling right along with that. And when I decide that I'd, you know, kind of like my military career, when I decided that I really didn't have anything more at that time to offer the military and the men and women that I was serving with, I decided time to move on. And I'll probably do the same thing when it comes to racing.
Great. And I wanted to add what you said about getting up so early in the morning. I want you to know, Don, I think about you some mornings whenever I get up, but I think that Luke mentioned that as well. If I don't want to get out of bed, I think, you know, Don's probably been up for a couple hours. He's probably already got 27 things done and you haven't even got out of bed yet. So, but that helps get me going. So
Don's made lunch by the time I get out of bed, usually.
So obviously you have always been extremely involved on the marketing side of Sportsman Drag Racing and been extremely successful in securing marketing partners on your racing efforts. So what advice would you offer to racers who aspire to gain marketing partners to assist them in their racing programs?
You know, Zach, that is probably at least one of the top 10 questions that I get asked a lot by other racers. Just because, you know, we have had success, but, you know, it's like anything else. It's like the social media world. Everybody sees all the glory, right? All the happy times, everybody's cheering, you know, cheers, having great food, traveling the country. And people don't typically show the hardships and the downfalls and the negatives and the no's and beating your head against the wall with people that you know that you can help them and so forth. And they just don't get it. They don't see you. They don't give you the opportunity. I've been successful, but I've failed a lot. Advice wise, once again, don't quit. Racers need to understand not only the practical application of marketing partners and those relationships and the strategies that companies are trying to employ to grow their company. Racers need to understand the philosophy, the actual true foundation of marketing. marketing and what those terms and how they're utilized in the marketplace. And I think that a lot of people, a lot of racers, and I was guilty of this early on in my career while I was, you know, in the Army and going to college for marketing, you know, learning exactly how to think about the no and overcoming the objection. Yeah, those are the types of things, the planning. Cam and I beat this up the other day about our trade shows and marketing on our podcast, that racers just don't plan enough from understanding that they're trying to take something that is not truly their full-time job. And you're talking to someone that that is their full-time job, and it's a company that they represent, and it's their job to be a good steward of their dollar. And you're trying to have an intellectual conversation with them because ultimately in the end, you're trying to gain money to fund your program one way or the other. But ultimately in the end, they're trying to fund their company. And a lot of people become one-sided or one-minded, if you will, in that process. So advice to racers: one, don't quit. Two, do your homework. Think about it from their point of view. Be your own worst devil's advocate. Get somebody that you know will tell you, dude, that pitch sucked, or you're missing the point. No, they're not going to want to deal with you. You've got to have that kind of mindset to be able to be prepared from that. So I don't know. That was a long-winded advice, because marketing is not something that is easy as figuring out, you know, you want to quote Luke, you know, there's not three driving styles: dialer, dropper, and, you know, monster. Marketing itself is a monster.
Yeah. And we've, you know, kind of talked to Sean Langdon and Dara Todd about it. It's not about what they can do for you. It's what you can do for them. And, you know, I think that relates to a lot of misconception in the marketing world.
Oh, I would totally agree with that. If you go into anything with anything where you're referring to, whether it's a conversation, a pitch, strategy, if you think for 1 second, 1/1000th of a second, that the individual that you're talking to or the company that they represent gives one care in the world about your racing, you're absolutely in the wrong spot. Because that has nothing to do with them. And I think that's why, you know, I made the comment about going back and getting the philosophy and understanding marketing. Marketing is a way to increase sales for that company. It has nothing to do with racing. It has nothing to do with that at all. And so, you know, people miss that. But if you go into it knowing, okay, look, they don't care about my racing. All they care about is how I'm going to solve the problem for them. And their problem is they need sales and they need market share. How am I going to help them? Okay, you'll go much further in a conversation with a business individual if it's about you solving their problem versus you trying to figure out how to go race.
Yeah. The old pitch of, this is what I'm going to do with your product. They really don't care if you take it in the garage and hit it with a hammer, you know, as long as they gain, you know, exponential amount of customers more than they had before, they're interested.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with that.
Maybe not live feed it, hitting it with a hammer, but you get the point. So the Super Comp start out, you know, you made the transition about the time Megan started racing Super Comp, I think. You made the transition into Top Sportsman. What kind of factors played into that decision?
Financial. That's a blur. I don't know if you were in the press conference that we did at PRI or not, but I know my cliche, you know, that I've said, my statement for that, and people are like, well, why are you leaving the Monte Carlo and going to the Camaro and the LS and the Supercharged and the Copo deal when you've got a top 10 car for the last 2 years and you've won, you know, you've got a consistent car? And the whole thing with that was, it was a business decision. It was a marketing business decision. Leaving Super Comp and going to Top Sportsman was exactly the same thing. We looked at it from the point that, one, the number of races that we traveled to, two, the cost expenses that we expended to be able to compete at those races to take care of our sponsors. And then three, the amount of money that was either won or not won. And when you move over into Top Sportsman, you know, we had a couple of years of data to look at for me driving for the family. And when we looked at it, we would have made more money if I had been driving Top Sportsman those that entire process, that entire time, because of the number of rounds won. You had to go less rounds to get paid in Top Sportsman than you did in Super Comp. And you obviously are competing against a smaller field size. So that increases. You're making less runs. So all of those things, you know, turned and turned and turned and turned. And when you got down to the end of the expense sheet, it just made more sense. At that time, Megan was coming into Super Comp. Mark was moving from the had already moved from the Monte Carlo over to the Mustang that he currently drives now. So the Monte Carlo was, for all intents and purposes, sitting kind of silent in the shop. So it just made sense. Sometimes you have to do things that, you know, make more business sense than it does racing sense at the time, because I know everybody was like, what in the world is O'Neill doing in a Top Sportsman car? Which most people don't know this, but that was the first license that I got. The first time I ever drove a race car after my dad died was his 1955 Chevy Top Sportsman car. And I was 19 years old and I went 520s. And now this is back in like 92, 93 time frame. 520s in the eighth mile was pretty good for a door car. But at the time, it was the height of IHRA, you know, quick eight racing, Pro Mod was coming out and so forth. But that's what he did. And I did the same thing. I had never, the first time I sat in a dragster, I was like, what the heck is this? So me getting back in a Top Sportsman car really felt like back at home, even though it had been well over 20 years.
Nice. And so going back to the marketing side, and this is something that I personally, I'm not ashamed to say I struggled with, and in a few years in sales has really helped take care of that for me. But on your perspective, how do you deal with rejections from prospective marketing partners? In other words, you know, how do you take a no?
So I'm going to pull some military out because most of my sales stuff comes from the military and recruiting, because you know, in recruiting, we sell something that you can't see, feel, taste, touch. We sell a lifestyle in the Army. We don't sell something that's tangible. We sell intangible. So how do you take a no? Well, one, you need to know when the no is going to come. And so how do you do that? You always expect the no. So when you walk in the room and you've done everything and you're like, hey, I want you to come be part of our program. I understand you're trying to grow. I want you to use us as an asset, and I'm going to do X, Y, and Z for you. And they go, no. And I'm going, okay, well, I kind of figured you were going to say that, and it must be the financial investment that's got you on the hook. So can you tell me if, you know, we move this over here, will that be more enticing? No. Okay, well, I kind of figured that. You keep going through that and overcoming the objective. It's always about the overcoming the objective. And you're continuing to overcome the objective until there's no objective there. They can't do anything except say yes. And I refer it back to dating, relationships. Recruiters used to tell me all the time, I can't recruit. And I'd look at them and be like, you got a wife? No, I got a girlfriend. So why can't you recruit? What do you mean? You sold her on you, didn't you? I'm just asking.
I do know how much money you make, so it wasn't the money.
Right. And so, you know, I mean, heck, Diane will tell you she turned me down 3 times when I asked her to marry me. She told me no 3 times. So, I mean, you cannot let a no in an objection deter you from being able to accomplish, because a lot of times it's just not the right time. And so you have to, if you get to that point, you go and they say, okay, I'm not, you know, yes, I know you've gotten me to the point where you've backed me into a corner, Don. I can't come up with an objection to tell you no again, but I can't tell you yes because it's just not in our strategy right now. Okay, no problem. That is a legitimate answer that you can't overcome, but you just keep going after them as every year as their strategy changes, and you never know where you might fall into that. But you can't let a no like derail you. I mean, come on. You didn't get turned down asking the prom queen? I mean, what the heck?
So NGK, VP, Dragster for Sale, and everybody that has been on board this whole operation for quite a few years now, How awesome is it for you to not only have a partnership with all those companies, but a personal friendship as well?
You know,
because I was at that press conference and you weren't their PR guy, Don O'Neill. You were their friend first. And then this is what we are doing together. It's never I or anything. It's always we in that camp.
Oh, absolutely. That is very much, you have to have a relationship. Or let me back up before I start that. You have to be passionate about the companies and the products that you're dealing with. And I believe that that's another layer in marketing or sponsorships or you know, taking your racing program to the next level, is that you have to be in a situation mentally secure in yourself to know that you want and believe that when you're talking about a product or a company, you would, you know, hate to take a military phrase, but you take a bullet for them, because that's how much you love them. They love you. You're holding hands. You're singing Kumbaya. You're eating Girl Scout cookies. You're in it to the end. And if you cannot do that, you do not need to have a partnership and you do not need to have a sponsor. And you probably just need to stay where you are until you can move to that next level. They are my friends. I mean, the NGK team, I love them to death. The VP guys, them as well. The Tub of Towels family this year, really getting involved after a trial, you know, a little trial program last year. I have them all. Cart's Gone Wild, a family-owned company, Magic Dry, Tommy Thompson, Don Corsett. Those guys treat everybody they come into contact with like family. I've got the laundry list of who's who involved, and most of them, other than Magic Dry and Tub of Towels, those two companies, most of these companies I've had for 3-4. Going on to, I've got a couple companies this year that are going over a decade with me. That's a long time to have a relationship through leadership changes, market and the economic structure changes. So you have to have the friendships. You know, when you have the conversation and they say, Don, we know you want to, we need to increase with you, but right now we can't do it financially. We need to do it some other way. Let's brainstorm about it. We don't want to end a relationship. Well, those are friendships, but they're also at the same time, you've got value to them. So they're doing everything they possibly can to keep you because they don't want to see you go to someone else.
Yeah. And I think that if you were just not a customer, but if you were just a sponsor driver for them and you didn't have that friendship, they'd say, hey, you know, not in the budget this year, thanks, maybe down the road. And you know, that's where you get into the friendship thing. It's kind of like your family member moving back home and have nowhere to stay. You know, hey, here's a room. That's kind of the way I see that relationship working out.
Oh, it is. It's you know, I'll try not to get choked up about it, but I mean, you know, most people out there that know anything about us, you know, Diane's been battling cancer for the past few months. You know, the NGK team sending her, you know, candies, mint from Chicago in the mail, you know, the other companies that are out there that are sending me text messages that are checking on her. Well, they're vice presidents. They're presidents of large automotive companies and consumer product companies, and they're going out of their way sending text messages around the holidays. How's Diane? What's going on? They have their own family. They have their own things going on in their life, but they're taking those moments to send me a text message or an email to say, hey, you know, how's she doing? What do you need? Is there something I can do? And they don't have to do that. And that is well outside the realm of any contractual obligations that we have. But you know, when they do things like that and they care like they do, it makes a huge difference on how you're able to perform for them, how you're able to communicate in a boardroom together to try to accomplish or overcome a challenge and make it a solution. So, absolutely. I can't do it without any of them. And now I'm getting to be a part of new organizations with the Patterson Group, the Freemans, those guys. I mean, it's never ending. and I'm very, very fortunate to be in that situation.
Well, and another thing that you are deeply involved in is coming up this Saturday is the it will mark the fifth annual DragsterForSale.com practice tree race that takes place in my backyard here in Evansville. Please tell our listeners who may be on the fence about coming why they should make the trip and what all do you have in store at this year's event?
Oh, wow. Good question. You know, that's funny. If you're in racing and it's January, for the love of God, and you're not going to come talk smack, let go of a button, win some cash, prizes, chance at some entries to some of the biggest races this upcoming season in 19, because you're going to sit at home and watch reruns of Street Outlaws. I don't know what the heck you're thinking. Anyway, our event, it was a brainchild. It just an aha moment. We traveled 5 years ago down south. Brad Plord's like, hey, dude, I got this crazy idea. I'm going to put on a practice tree race. And it was in the one room in a it wasn't a YMCA, but it was kind of like the town hall or something. I mean, literally my kitchen is about the same size as the room we were in, and it was awesome. We had a great time, and we were sitting in a Waffle House at 3 o'clock in the morning in Coleman, Alabama, and Diane and the girls and I, we were like, we need to do that in Indiana. And so here we are. We're going to pay a lot of cash. Last year, we had 550 people from all over. I got people that are flying in from Texas this year, North Carolina. I think I've got a couple people that are driving down from Minnesota. Carpools coming from every direction here in the country. Weather's going to be great. I got a couple surprises. Most people know, quite the marketing point. We're going to have a Facebook video later on in the week leading up to the event. But we got some surprises, race pack on board, giving away Sportsman. Man, how could you be on the fence? You got to live under a rock. if Saturday afternoon rolls around and doors are going to open at 1, and if you're sitting at home and you're not on your way to our event, I just pack, box your helmet up and send it to somebody else, because you just I don't know what's wrong with you. It is gonna be awesome, and I'm hopeful. I'm looking for 600. Last year 500 was my number. As you know, I'll tell everybody, it's Sunday while we're recording this, and right now I'm at 435 pre-entered racers entries for the top main event, for the top ball. And I am stoked. I think that if that's the case, we may get to 600 entries, and that would be huge. Just huge. So yeah, I hope you bring your wife, your girlfriend. If you're a female racer, bring your husband or your boyfriend. We give away a lot of stuff, and it's the who's who of sponsors that send stuff from all over the country, gift certificates toward big discounts towards product. It's an event. It is a full-fledged racing event like you would have at any other bracket race, with round giveaways and just the whole deal. We feed you. If you leave there and you're hungry, you're a vegetarian. We buy some beverages for you to have a good time. And I hope that everyone comes. And if it's your first time coming, please let me know it's your first time coming. And if you have any questions or comments, by all means, let me know, because our whole goal is to put on the best quality event that we possibly can.
Yeah, I know you're getting 8 entries for my household, so I'm going to thank you for that. My 7-year-old all year long. Is it time to go to the practice tree race yet? And it's finally time. So thanks for digging into my pocket a little bit more, man. I appreciate that. But back to the top sportsman side of things. 427 Pro Charge small block.
Nope.
I thought it was a 427 LS style.
It is a 427 LS style, but it's a Magnuson supercharger, no Pro Charger.
Oh, it is a Magnuson. You're right. You caught me off guard on that one. So what about ET-wise? What are we thinking?
Right now, the ceiling is kind of unlimited, because we're kind of controlling our ceiling expectation. We know that... I say what we know. We feel comfortable in saying that we believe we can make 1,500 horsepower easily. Our expectation when we roll into Charlotte, we're going to be hopeful that we're going to be in the 680 range to start consistently. with the program. There's a lot of unknowns. No one's done it. That's probably the biggest thing. You're taking, you take a 350 Copo supercharged motor from GM. The good ones are in the 1300 range. Typically, they're saying in circles that the Magnuson supercharger is worth 100 to 125 horse bolt on. We'll just say, you know, for numbers. And so you're talking about 1425 horse in a, you know, 3000 pound car. And we're going to put it in a, we're going to make it a 427, and we're going to put it in a 2200 pound car. So we believe that the 650, 660 range is probably definitely not out of reach, but we're going to make sure that as we get there, we're doing it consistently. That's our big thing. We want to make sure that we've got a solid engine program to be able to sell to other racers, as well as, you know, obviously it's a GM, it's a GM program.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, that thing is probably going to, not only doesn't look good, I think it's going to go as fast as it, as good as it looks.
Well, I hope so. I've had a couple of people tell me that, if I don't get in the 650s by the end of the year, they're going to come over and punch me in the head. So, because the math just doesn't, you know, the math just doesn't work. You know, the math says that we're definitely going to go faster than that. And obviously, we're not going to be following COPO rules on size of throttle body, size of inlet, size of or, you know, the limitations on the pulleys and in the gears. We're going to, you know, we are going to move a little outside that realm. We are going to start the year, I believe, with a standard COPO supercharger with a 105 for the throttle body and the inlet. But eventually, at some point throughout the year, we're going to expand that a little bit and max it out. But we're the only one on the island. JC Beatty at ATI has a 388 LS, but he's using a Whipple, and he's been 420s in the eighth mile and 680s and a quarter in Chris Rainey's Pro Mod car. So I got to think that those are, you know, comfortable numbers for us to expect as we move forward to Charlotte in April.
So near the end of these interviews, we'd like to ask just a few quick kind of off the cuff questions. One thing I wanted to ask you, what the heck is going on with our Tar Heels?
They, my friend, are having a case of, we think we're better than we actually are. I'm pretty sure today, as we're recording this on Sunday, I already mentioned, Roy Williams probably does not have a voice, and he is taking probably an entire bottle of blood pressure medicine. Can't play defense, turning the ball over, collapsing too quickly on penetration, not protecting the perimeter. People just kick it back out, and it's threes all day long. And it seems like it's, you know, NCAA right now, most teams, the good ones, have 2 to 3, if not 4 guys on the floor at any time that can just throw it down from the parking lot. So yeah, we took that spanking yesterday from Louisville. I heard a lot of chatter, people sending me texts and so forth, giving me a hard time for being beaten by an unranked team. But I don't think that Louisville's that, you know, for them to not be ranked, I don't think they get the credit that they're as good as they are. But that's, you know, nobody asked me to do rankings.
Right. Yeah, I think Louisville came out of the gate a little bit slow, and now they're picking up steam, and they got a good coaching staff and obviously some good players. But yeah, it seemed to me yesterday that Carolina was just, they were just flat. Like they all partied too much the night before or something. They just weren't quite with it. But I think the talent is there, but the effort, they need to pick it up a little bit. But the great thing about it is we're talking about it in January. So hopefully about by March, then they'll have their stuff together and ready to make a tournament run, because the records don't matter once the tournament starts. All you got to do is be in it. So hopefully they'll turn it around and be better.
Well, that's for sure. I mean, heck, Evansville beat Loyola this past week after their Cinderella run in the dance last year. They come to Evansville and got beat by this little school here, and you know, I think they were a 5 or 8 or something, 10-point favorite, and they got crushed. So if you like drag racing and competition and mental games and so forth, watch some college basketball and watch it go through the ebb and flow during a game.
So I wasn't quite ready for these lighthearted questions yet. I've got one that kind of hits close to home. We all know that you wear your heart on your sleeve. You're very outspoken about, you know, your personal life. How cool is it to not only have the success that you've had in the past, but the success you're going to have is going to be, you know, everything this year is going to be for your wife, for Diane, for everything that she's going through. And she's way tougher than you and I put together. To see her, she's not going to miss a race, I don't think. No matter what, she's going to drag herself out of bed just to be there. So kind of, how much is that driving you right now?
You know, man, she's a brute. She is, you know, for someone who's has MS, you know, was in a wheelchair when she was, you know, in her 20s, taught herself how to walk again, recovered from all that. She's out here. She doesn't miss a race. She'll change her rear gear if she needs to. She'll change transmission. She immerses herself in trying to understand what the racetrack looks like, where, you know, where we should be, what the groove's doing. She's there. She is involved from A to Z in everything, from sponsorship talks of what we think we can do, how we can impact people, because she's a mom, she's got kids, she's grew up in a major major market city in Chicago, so she's got we were supposed to have surgery the week of PRI, and she said, no, we're going to PRI, and I'm gonna be there, and I'm gonna walk every day, and she did. We, you know, behind closed doors, it was funny, I'll say it now, JB told me, he said, Diane outstepped me 2 out of 3 days at the PRI show. He goes, she's got MS and cancer. And, you know, he goes, how is that supposed to make me feel? And I'm like, yeah, tell me about it. You know, so, I mean, she is, and we're recovering, and we feel, you know, she might not make the drive to Charlotte. She may be on an airplane to fly to Charlotte in April because she might not be able to handle the drive. But no matter what.
Might we catch the same flight.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, we are. You know, we worked really hard to get here. You know, I can't take anything away from the family, because, you know, they give us the financial resources, the leeway for us to perform and do what we need to do. And she is right there. And, you know, when I want to lose my cool and blow a head gasket because I just lost 45 points on a bye to the final run because I give it back at the top end, and I'm mad because it probably makes a difference on me being top five in the world versus finishing seventh in the world. In her mind, it's the even keel. Think about how you're acting. It's tough. And she is my worst critic, because she brings me back down to life no matter how hard I argue about it. She's not gonna just give in. She'll stay at me until I see it her way, which 9 times out of 10, when it comes to being a wonderful human being, she has me beat by train length over that. So 2019 is definitely gonna be for her. And we're going to take this new to us car and new program. You know, I know we're going to hit potholes, and we're going to drive over speed bumps, and we're going to have some, you know, we're going to have some learning curve. But in the end, we've got the best equipment. Her and I have put forth all the effort to get to this point. So now we want to show everybody exactly how good we can be, how good we are with what we've had, and now what we have. So, you kind of got me on that one, Jake. That was a good question.
All right, so back to the ladder side of things. You had the VP Racing Fuels Monster Carlo. What is this car called? What are we gonna call it? I mean, you can't call it the Monster Mero. That's so 2017 and 18.
No, you know, we don't have a name for it yet.
Contest time.
Yeah, we don't have a name for it yet. We're still, you know, because with NGK and NTK being on, and Tubba Towels and VP obviously still prominently on the car. We have not come up with a name for it yet, and it's definitely not outside my mind, because I have been trying to come up with something so I can have some sort of hashtag or so forth to give it its own personality as we move forward in 19, as we're doing all the refurbishing and crossover build and transitioning from a pro stock car to a top sportsman car. That's a good question, and you're probably right. We probably do need to have a contest, get some kids involved, and see. If it wasn't such a big secret, I've always wanted to have that type of contest for someone to do artwork. I always like the artwork deal. I think, who is that? Is Tasca? I think Tasca is the one that always does. Is it him and Hagen or Beckman that does the lemonade stand? And yep. Riley's kids or whatever, and they do the different artwork contests for
him and Beckman, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I always love that. That I can't draw for a lick, but when the kids do that, it kind of gets me. So might be something I've talked to Diane. We might have to dream up something between now and Charlotte for NGK to come up with a name for the Camaro.
So what's your favorite, what do you have to eat on race day? What's your favorite race day meal?
You know, and you probably won't believe this, I don't have one. I can promise you this. If you come to the racetrack and you don't have any food in your trailer, I am telling you right now, if you're listening, do not stop at my trailer because I don't have any food either. Diane and I, because it's the two of us and the dogs, I would say that 9 times out of 10, there's more food for the dogs in the refrigerator than there is us, because it's just me and her. So I get up early and it's either an orange, an apple, or a granola bar and water in the morning as I'm strumming around. And then I typically don't eat during the day. I don't like to eat while I'm racing. I never have. And so, and then JB's the cook. Dinner time and you're hungry, definitely stop by, because JB, who knows what JB's cooked up. But yeah, no, I don't have a meal. I really don't at all, especially at the racetrack. I'm hungry. Just throw something in front of me and I'll probably eat it.
Fair enough.
So I know that your partner in the top sportsman category, Mark McDonald, in 2017, you finished 8th and he finished 7th. So in 2018, how great was it for him, his name not to be over yours? Because I know he probably rode you like a horse.
Yeah, you know, what was that? In 17, I finished 2nd in the division and Mark was behind me. And, it's a unique dynamic of challenge there, because Mark's an engineer and I'm a marketer. So the way I look at things versus the way he looks at things, we really are two different mindsets. And I'm a military guy, so you know, it, who knows what I'm going to say, but I think he gets up, he doesn't want to ever lose to me, and I know I don't want to lose to him. But I think we bring that out in each other. We had a run in 17 where we met a lot. I went red to him in Norwalk at the Nationals and was pretty upset at myself because I probably was trying to be just too tight and you know, it is what it is. And he went on to the final. That's typically the thing. One of us, if we meet up with each other, one of us is going to the final, whoever wins. We typically have that kind of outcome based on how the ladder falls. So it is, I can assure you that last year was an off year for Mark. I don't think he's going to let 2018 repeat itself, even though, you know, he had a couple good races, but he also had a couple bad stretches with mechanical issues and so forth. And I don't think he is he's going to allow that to happen, because he has an engineering mindset. He's a competitive individual. So he's been doing his work and off season preparation. And I think, as a matter of fact, I think this week I saw his name on the list for the Gators for the 50th. So he's going to start his season early and get after it. And we'll start ours a few weeks later in Charlotte.
Hell hath no fury like Mark McDonald with a chip on his shoulder.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think he's going to be he's going to come back and he's going to be pretty aggressive. I think he's, the worst part, and I think that's probably what more so that happened, the worst part about it for us in top sportsmen or in top dragster, really, when we don't get the same amount of claims that, you know, super comp, super gas, super street, super stock that they get on the national level. Now, granted, we don't have as many races as them, but when you fall or you have something mechanically go wrong, you get yourself behind a scheduling conflict and you start having to band-aid things together because you've got to make the next race or the next race that's reasonable distance wise. And it becomes a challenge. And you can kind of fall into it instead of just throwing a towel in, which who in the world drives a race car and just throws a towel in? You go to work and you having to get out here and travel some. So, I don't think Mark's going to he's definitely not going to sit back on his laurels this season. And he'll be gunning for everybody.
Yeah, Lord knows I should have thrown the towel in a long time ago.
Right. Would have been a lot less flat tires. So, Don, top dragster, top sportsman in particular, added to NHRA US Nationals in 2019. How juiced are you for that?
My prayers are answered. You know, Indy is Indy special. Even at the divisional level, Indy is special. Man, I'll tell you how I found out, and it was kind of unique. I had somebody send me a text message that said, I'll tell you how it happened. I was on the hunt. I had some meetings. I had a meeting set up with a company, and I really needed to know the class schedule for top sportsmen because they were looking for some certain markets. And we had heard that there was going to be some cutting and some shuffling, and which there was, obviously. And I needed this, and I was texting everybody on the executive side, and I'm like, I need a schedule. I promise I'll sign a non-disclosure agreement. I won't tell anybody, but I need it because I'm trying to get this marketing.
That's so what they all say.
Yeah. You know, right. Yeah. Well, lo and behold, I didn't get it. Right. But the one thing I did get was I got a text message back from an executive that said, the one thing I can tell you is you will not be announcing at the U.S. Nationals. And when I read that, I gave out a little bit of a shriek. I'm not going to lie to you because I'm here to tell you right now, the top sportsman, top dragster at Indy, at the U.S. Nationals, at the Big Go on hollow ground, the historic fact of that event. I don't care how old you are, how young you are. It is an experience. It is a marathon, but there is nothing like Indy, and I'm gonna be right there in the same boat with the other. I think we'll probably have 45, even though they're only gonna take 36. I think by the time silver cards, gold cards are all added in there, I think we're probably gonna have 45 cars in both. I'll
the
be right.
Will be what?
Top sportsman side, it won't be that fast. I would venture to say top sportsman side of the house, 680s would be really quick for that. It's going to take a lot of grade points to get in to begin with. Top dragster side of the house, you know, I've heard rumblings of some individuals that are trying to come that are pretty quick. But I would venture with the 610 ceiling now in top dragster, I don't think it would be outside the realm of having 32 cars between 610 and probably 629, 626 maybe in that range. I think you could have 32 cars between 10 and 30. 630s. I think it's very easy with taking grade points in material. Just enough people with, you know, eight and seven grade points to get in, as well as the silver card guys to enter that event. It's going to be awesome.
So we had a guy message the podcast Facebook page. He said he's getting back into bracket racing after 25 years off, and he wants to know any bracket racing tip that you've got. I know a top sportsman's kind of just a really fast bracket race, and super comp's kind of an index race, but it's still the same concept. So what kind of tip could you give somebody that's A, either getting into it, or B, coming back into it after some time off?
Be open-minded. I had someone, and go take your lesson. Bones Todd used to tell me when I lived in Huntsville and stayed at his shop, he used to always, I asked him one time, I was like, Bones, I said, how did you get so good, dude? And everybody knows that Bones is cocky and he's always going to have a good answer. And he's like, O'Neal, I took a lot of $100 whippings when I was younger. And I'm like, what? He goes, got to take your $100 whippings. Go enter a race, get your butt whooped, go to the buyback window and figure it out. You got to take your whippings. And this sport's no different than golf or anything else that you think or fishing. You're just not going to go buy a car, a truck, a trailer, show up at the racetrack with a helmet and start being the next world champ, setting the world on fire. You've got to put in the work. You got to put in the practice. Just be open-minded. Find somebody to follow. I think you gotta have somebody that is humble enough to share with you and not ridicule you or belittle you while you're making those mistakes. if you can't figure out why it's a mistake, that's probably the other thing, because you're not going to know it's a mistake other than the fact that your electricity didn't come on. But you need someone that'll help you with that. You need something like a This Is Bracket Racing Elite program with Bogak and Brandon and those guys. You need somebody that is it got a teaching mindset to help you along. So before you spend all that money on a truck and trailer and a race car, do yourself some research.
Did just solely asking for a friend. Did Bones say how many $100 licks you got to take? Just asking for a friend.
No, and Bones wouldn't tell you anyway. That mug, man, that's a character right there.
He's actually agreed to let us ridicule him here on the podcast one day. So that's coming up here in the near future. But thank you, Don, for coming on with us today. I'm glad that, you know, I not only can call you a competitor, but a friend. And, you know, we've came a long way.
Oh, absolutely, man. I'm very excited, you know, on a couple fronts. One, definitely, you know, you and Zach doing the podcast deal. Obviously, Cam and I over doing our stuff. We're definitely talking about two different aspects of racing. So that's awesome. You guys are doing great. Diane and I listened to you guys' show coming back from Indy the other day from the hospital. So congratulations to both of you. You guys keep communicating and spreading the message about drag racing and motorsports. And second off, you know, Jake, I wish you nothing but the best on the announcing front. If I ever get fired from drag racing or something, I probably would be right over there with you, holding on to a microphone, trying to do it on the NHRA side, because I definitely do enjoy it, much like yourself. So I wish you all the best this year, and hopefully this is just the scratching on the surface for what's to come for you in your life.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited for it, and as I said last week, I just as long as I don't crap the bed, I think I'll do quite all right.
You're gonna make mistakes. They freaking you can't be any worse than me. They let me do Chicago and Indy. So I mean, you know, I mean, come on, you know, and well, and Charlotte. I even got to announce some at Charlotte. So yeah, no, I think you'll do fine. And Brian Loans and Reinhardt and Costello are three guys that I truly do look up to in that segment of the sport, of, you know, that little area. And how they do things and communicate and how they see things and the wording choice that they do. And I learned a lot from Loans and Reinhardt when I did it in Chicago, and definitely from those three as I moved through Indy and Charlotte doing those times. So I'd never pass it up, and hopefully you'll enjoy it just as much as I did.
Yeah, I've got Loans kind of coaching me through the way. There's a lot of stuff that I didn't even realize that he's like, hey, hold on just a second. Let's change some things. And I haven't even started yet. You know, we're 3 months out. So, yeah, I appreciate it. And, yeah, he's definitely the dude that has not been given that job. He earned every inch of that job.
Oh, absolutely. I wouldn't, you know, when they asked me when we were going to do the deal, when we did the deal at PRI on the NHRA stage, they were like, so who do you want to be on stage with? And I'm like, Loans. And they're like, what? I'm like, I want Brian. You know,
we don't need Pedregon over here. No.
And, you know, I mean, think about it this way. Let's think about the fact that you keep getting up and doing something that people are out there ridiculing you about. You know, so you at that moment when you're continuing to do something that you're passionate about, and you either fall into that category of love what you do or do what you love, that, you know, you have to think. Pentagon is up there no different than Dave Reef was or Lewis Bloom or any of them. And anytime they're getting bashed, they're still doing something that they're passionate about doing. There's other things that people could go do. And so I don't ever try to look at it from a standpoint that, man, they suck. Well, yeah, but they probably would not be as good at what they're doing now if they were going to do something else. You know, they love what they do. And you have to be passionate about things in life and do what you love and love what you do. And if you do, you will infect others and be positive as the world turns, not only for your kids or your significant others, but everyone that you come in contact with. So I think that's important. And I think you'll definitely do that, Jake, when you get your chance down in the big state of Texas.
Yeah. And I think if everything goes well, I'll be actually at Z-Max. And, you know, that's kind of where Lone stepped in. He was like, hey, you know, they were going to give him my tryout at the four wides. And he said, hold on a minute. He said, you don't want to go there because you can't see the racetrack. That's not a fair tryout. And he said, do Houston or don't do it at all. I said, okay.
Oh, he's absolutely right, because they didn't that was the funny thing, you know, at the spring race. You know, I spun the car out on the first qualifier in the shutdown area. Went through, quickest lap I'd ever made on one kit in the car after we spent the week testing with Barker and Stevie. And they couldn't see me. They didn't know. They didn't know that I spun the car around, did a 360 and didn't hit anything and drove off the end of the racetrack. And you know, I get back in the lanes and Costello's like, man, I heard you spun the car around. I'm like, dude, you didn't see? And he's like, no, you've never been in the tower, have you? And I went, oh. So then when I got to announce, I saw you can only see lanes 1 and 2. You cannot see lanes 3 and 4.
Yeah, I think that was definitely a big help there.
Oh, yeah. It's always good for you to be able to see so that you can commentate about what's going on other than just watching the digits on the screen show up.
Absolutely.
Well, Don, it's been great having you on Dialed In. We certainly appreciate your time and the kind words. Definitely means a lot. And we certainly appreciate it. And nothing but the best of luck to you, buddy, and everything going on. And we're certainly looking forward to this coming Saturday at the Practice Tree Race. We will see you there.
Well, hey, who knows? Maybe one of you two will win and you'll be on Race and Rental Cars podcast with me and Cam. So that's a surprise.
Don't hold your breath for me.
Come on. You gotta do is just let go before it gets real bright. That's the key.
I lost a $20 bet somebody wants at a practice tree race. I wouldn't bet the house on me.
Well, you know how it does. You can't be in it to win it. That's it.
$20 bet last year at the law practice tree race with Mr. Don O'Neill. And I'm not sure how that $20 bet shook out. I think I lost. I don't really remember. I'm sure Don remembers quite well.
I think I turned back around and lost it to your boy.
Probably right. So give me one prediction 2019, where we're going to be at in the national standings. What's the goal? Top 5, top 10 again?
Yeah. So I haven't finished it yet. I'm going long-winded. So I do goals, right? I do goals. I did goals. Last year, goal number one was to win a national event. We checked that off, so we're good. Still finishing the top 10. That is always a goal. I think any racer, that's a legitimate goal when you're a competitive guy or you're a good, solid competition. You know, you want to finish in the top 10, get a silver card, get your entry fees and crew member stuff taken care of. Helps ease the pain and burden of racing. I would like to finish in the top 5 2 years, you know, in a row, 7 and 8. Man, I really want to be a Jegs All-Star. I'm not gonna fluff on that one. Probably gonna run Division 5 again this year because it works out so well for our schedule, for our number of races. Would like to be a Jegs All-Star. Don't know if J.R. Lobner is gonna go and screw that up for me again. He just dominated last year. But yeah, I'm hopeful to definitely finish in the top 10 again. Would like to be the first top sportsman car with an LS motor to win. That would be another good one. I've done a lot of research, have not found that. So if anybody's listening and they know of a top sportsman car with an LS motor that has picked up a Wally, by all means, please send me a message, or Jake or Zach. But that is, I'd like to do that for Patterson Elite, Magnuson, NGK, NTK, obviously. But yeah, that's got some goals. I'm still going through my evaluation sheet that was up on Bracket Racing Elite. I still got to do all that, but we're getting there. We're ready for 2019, and I appreciate you asking me that, having me on.
There you go, your 2019 Top Sportsman National Champion, Don O'Neill. Thank you for coming on, and we appreciate you. We'll see you here in just a few days.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, have a good one, Don. So, Zach, that was an awesome interview with Don, and you know, just kind of as we led up to that and the precursor of it, you know, he's just a down to earth good dude, and a guy that we love to see have the success that he's having.
Yeah, that was great talking to Don, and I feel motivated after talking to the dude. Like I'm ready to go out and just try to set the world on fire. Like he has that effect on people. His enthusiasm is infectious. That was a great interview. So certainly appreciated having him on the show.
So just before we get into the In Motion Solutions final round, we're gonna have a quick word from our friends at Flickr Pro Promotions, and we'll be right back.
Hi, this is Cody Pollard with Flickr Promotions. Just want to tell y'all about the 6th annual Southern Big Buck Nationals, February 8th through the 10th at No Problem Raceway, Belrose, Louisiana. There will be an all-run 3 grander Friday night. Box and no box will be separated till 8 cars or less. Box weekend entry is $375, which includes two 10s. The no box weekend entry is $175, which includes two 3 granders. There will be a 64 car box shootout for $10,000. No box 32 car shootout for $2,500. If anybody has any questions, please contact me 225-776-6818. Or make sure you like us on Facebook at Flicker Promotions.
So our In Motion Solutions final round discussion, and it's one that kind of hits close to home for me because, you know, I am in that world now. But there was a video that went pretty viral. It had 100 comments, 101 shares on it. Dad's throwing down at a junior race on the starting line. We're not going to talk about what event or where it was at because it was nothing on the promoter whatsoever, but throwing right hooks, just going after it.
Right.
Zach, have you ever experienced anything like that?
No, not that I can think of offhand. Have I ever seen anything that resembles that? I mean, I've heard stories of dads at little league games and different kids sporting events wherever they, you know, throw big fits or get riled up at each other. But you just got to think about, we're talking about such a small percentage of people who are just from a parent's perspective, the example that you're setting for your kids. And this drag racing is one of the most sportsmanlike activities that there is. You know, everybody tends to be a very good sport. One thing you got to know in drag racing is that you got to be a good loser because you're going to lose a lot. You're going to win very little. And so you be gracious when you win and you be humble, you know, be humble. And when you lose, you know, kind of learn from it. But throwing right hooks on a starting line, I don't understand it. You know, who knows what the background was and what was said, but at a junior drag race of all things to see that just it blew me away, man. I don't even know exactly what else to say about it except for there's absolutely no place for that in our sport, period.
Well, you know, I do have a confession here. We were at a somewhat local bracket race, I guess. It was a little bit west on 64 and 57, and I was with Mickey's grandson Jacob, and we were running juniors there. It might have been Harrisburg. Heck, I don't know. We were on the starting line, and we were having problems getting the car to roll into the stage beam and couldn't get the car to roll, and it timed him out. And the junior parent next to me thought it was the funniest thing in the whole world. You know, this was an elimination round, like round three or four. And you know, I wanted to punch him in the nose, but, you know, at the same time, it's, you know, he's got to live with making humor out of a kid not getting to race or having equipment malfunction. And, you know, I kind of let him know that, you know, that was just as funny as he thought it was. But, you know, at some point we got to take responsibility on ourselves and say, hey, you know, it's not about us parents. It has nothing to do with us parents. It's about making sure the kid has the time of his life and learns along the way, you know, this is how you do things and this is how you don't do things.
Yeah, exactly. You would think in that situation, maybe, hey, you know, what's going on with the car? You're having trouble? Maybe I can help you out. You know, I mean, that's what you would think and hope. I mean, so the kid doesn't have to, yes, mechanical, I mean, any type of mechanical issue and failure is part of the sport. You know, we all have that. We've all had it cost us a round, you know, one way or the other. But, you know, then it would be, the hope would be to come over and try to help, you know, because that's just, you know, to see that, yes, it's competition. And I guess that's maybe the only segue or the only way I can think. I mean, it's just some people just can't handle competition and being nice. You know, you're just, some of it just doesn't go together. So, you know, I guess that's the only way to explain kind of the unexplainable behavior of that. But I would just hope that, you know, any junior parents out there that are listening to this, you know, you guys are awesome. Like getting kids involved in this sport and bringing them up in the pits of the drag strip and teaching them the mechanical ways of the car, how hard work gets you success, how working on your driving and everything gets you improvement. Man, I mean, you guys are awesome. And you're literally the breeding ground of the next stars and the next people that are going to win these big money races and bracket racing. So everybody that's doing it right, bravo. Guys that are fighting on a starting line, boo hiss. Bad show.
Yeah. Grow up. Two words. Yeah. You know, it's a lot different. You know, even in big cars, we see people get heated, but, you know, you're setting an example for your kids. So it's time to wake up and it's time to reap what you sow, for lack of better terms, because, you know, that's what you're showing is acceptable to your child in the race car. So I don't know. I never had the pleasure of being in the junior myself, but, you know, I would feel like, you know, probably the greatest advice would come from your parent, or the greatest example would come from your parent. And that's the way I try to look at it.
Yep. Very true.
So that'll do it. Episode number 18. We're making the best of this long winter. We finally got some snow as it is January 13th. And I think that we're going to be on the racing cusp here real soon. And we'll quit boring you guys to death with some winter jargon.
Yeah, well, we certainly appreciate everybody listening. I still do have a couple sets of dialed in decals left. $10 a set, guys. Just get a hold of me and I'll get them sent out to you right away. We certainly appreciate all of you that have bought those stickers and displayed them on your vehicles with pride. Thank you so much for helping spread the word. If you guys like what you hear, tell your friends, tell other racers that, hey, you know, this is good shop material. This is good to listen to when you're doing stuff at home or driving down the road. We certainly appreciate that, you know, and to everybody out there, just a thank you very much for supporting this, and we're going to keep it going, so we certainly appreciate it. Everybody have a good week, and take care.
Yep, we'll see you guys here in a week or so, episode 19.